I got a million questions about Danny Jensen. Jansen? Oh God. How do I?
Jansen.
Okay, so we got a ton of questions on Twitter about Danny Jensen, who is the catching.
Jansen.
It's
God
Jansen. This
damn
is like the worst Abbott and Costello routine ever,
it!
George.
Okay, I'll do it right this time. Welcome to episode 154 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. This is our first show of 2018, so I want to say Happy New Year to all of our listeners and to you guys as well. On a scale of 1 to trading for Yengervis Solarte, how are you guys feeling right now?
Well, today is the first day it's been above freezing here in the Northeast in, I believe, 11 days. So I'm still really cold.
This has been awful. I'm just for the record, I'm gonna say I've been like dead the last few days. It's not fun. Mike, how you hanging in there?
To answer your question, on that scale, I'm Yang. I don't really know what that means, but okay.
You're Yanging in there.
Gervis.
Would you say it was better than being Gervis?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So, guys, this has been a really weird off season. I mean, not a lot has happened since our last show. And for you, Brett, I mean, it's been a while since we've had you on, just because that's the way the off season goes here. But 11 of BP's top 15 free agents remain unsigned as we record this here on... What's tonight? Tuesday night. It is January 9th. So it's been a really slow off season. But the good news is we are kicking off our Flags Fly Forever positional preview series tonight. We're going to talk about catchers. But before we do that, a little bit of housekeeping here before we get things going. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. Subscribe today with a one-year membership to read all of our content. Right now, we just kicked off the positional preview series at BP. We have over 20 articles per week, so a lot of great fantasy content going on right now. We have a bunch of new writers, new faces that you can go over, new voices you can read over at BP. Follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP, and I am at George Bissell. You can pre-order the Baseball Prospectus 2018 annual. It is coming out in February. We have all spent collectively a lot of time on that project, so if you like the work we do at BP, you will love that project. Brett, I hear you laughing. Did you survive the editing process?
We still have a couple hours left, but it's like it's wonderful, and it's also like being kicked in the nuts for four straight months, but also wonderful.
The end result is fantastic, I must say. Mike, you got to write about the Mariners. We've talked about this, but we got the worst possible draws out of this, like the Marlins and the Mariners. It's awful.
Well, it was worse for you because at least, well, I mean, you did write about Stanton and Gordon, but like I got to write about some players who are still there, like James Paxton and Robinson Cano and Nelson Cruz. Like, who's the best player that you wrote about who's still with the team? Like, I guess it's Yelich, and he might get traded too.
Yeah, Realmuto is interesting. I mean, it's like, I don't know, what's the analogy? The island of misfit toys, sort of, for Moneyball. Like, there's just a strange collection of talent there at the moment. So
did they have a farm system? Because that's one thing
No.
with the Mariners. DePoto's made so many moves that when I got to the farm players, I was like, oh my god, there's nothing here.
Oh, if you think the Mariners are bad, you have not spent any time perusing James Nelson's BREF page. So Just
okay. Just, point taken.
And he's maybe their best position prospect. It's a tough sledding out there in Miami. All right, so let's get back on track here, guys. We are going to talk about catchers today. Before we do this, let's lay down a few ground rules, as Ron Burgundy would say. We're going to do this the same way we've always done it. This is I think this is the third year now that we've done this. It's some of my favorite podcasts of the year. So we're going to keep the format the same as we've always done it. We're going to talk about each of the tiers in BP's fantasy tiered rankings, which are up at Baseball Prospectus right now. Mike did them. Our whole staff had input on them, but they're Mike's final rankings, and he does a fantastic job as always. So good job, Mike. So if you're reading this, I mean listening to this, you can follow along with the rankings up at BP right now. So we're going to talk about each of the tiers, and I want to just read sort of a general outline of what each tier is. That way there's no confusion when we jump into them. So five-star players are really the studs at their position. They're the guys who are generally going to earn over $30 in mixed leagues, or they're going to go for that type of price in an auction. Four-star players are just a little bit of a cut below. Those are typically the $20 range guys. Three-star tiers are, you know, double-digit dollar value players in auctions. Two-stars are typically single-digit guys, and one-star tier guys are mostly just kind of last round guys, people you can get for a dollar, dart throws, and things like that. So let's dive right into it, guys, because I'll start off with you, Mike. You put these rankings together, and I know we had a little bit of a debate back and forth as a staff, but you ended up settling with Gary Sanchez as the lone five-star catcher this year, and I want you to kind of take us through the process you had going into it and how you eventually settled on Sanchez as the only five-star guy at the position.
Well, I started out with – so when I sent the rankings out to the staff, I started out with him as a four-star guy. And you know, I had him clearly a cut above of the other four-star guys who were Wilson Contreras and Buster Posey. And then I got some feedback from the staff, which was a couple people like, hey, like – you know, Gary Sanchez was really bleeping good last year, and you know, he has the potential to hit 40 home runs, and he plays in Yankee Stadium, and you know, he could get better. You know, and I was kind of already on the cusp with him on the five star, so I decided to move him up. You know, where I hesitated was, you know, last year, you know, coming into 2017, his TAV was significantly better, and we kept him in the four star. So I was like, well, you know, maybe he should still be in the four star. But in the end, I looked at him like, you know, it's really hard to, you know, these rankings are kind of subjective anyway, but it's really hard to just leave him with Castillo and Posey. Like, I want to differentiate. Like, even if you don't think Sanchez should be going as high as his ADP is now, I just want to differentiate and make sure people knew he is a cut above those guys, and I wanted to put him in the five-star.
I think for me personally, I think the floor with Sanchez from a power standpoint and the counting stats and what that's going to do, I think it's just considerably higher than anyone else at the position. I mean, he missed a month last year and still ended up with 33 home runs. So,
well, I mean, that's a good question. Like, what's the downside with Sanchez? Like, is it 25 home runs and a 250 batting average? And is it even higher than that? Like, you're absolutely right, George. Like, I don't see much of a downside with him, barring injury, of course.
Yeah, I mean, Brett, you can probably speak to this more than anybody. I know this, if I'm remembering correctly, this was something we talked about last year, where there's probably some variability with the batting average year to year. There's going to be some fluctuation with Sanchez, because he is still a guy who strikes out a bit. And I don't know if, like, he hit 278 last year. I don't think he's going to continue to be a 280 hitter. Is that a fair assessment of the hit tool with Sanchez here?
Yeah, I'm really not. I mean, he hits the ball hard. He really doesn't strike out that much. He struck out about 22% of the time last year, which is really not significant. I mean, he's not going to be he's not going to be Buster Posey, but I think a 280 average is perfectly achievable. I mean, the number I want to focus on, which I think is most important for Sanchez, is the number 18. That is the number of starts he got at designated hitter last year. So when you put together the games he played at catcher, the games he played at DH, and the time he missed to injury, you know, he probably, best guess, he probably would have if he probably would have played 147, 148 games if he had not gotten hurt with the time at DH. And given how many timeshares we have at catcher and how few catchers we have even catching 120 games in a year, that is going to be on top, you know, but to put aside the average, put aside the power, even put aside the counting stats, it's the amount that he's going to play that is going to be the differentiator between Sanchez and is what I think really gets him that valid argument of being a five-star guy.
Yeah, that's a great point. Sometimes the most important stat in fantasy baseball is games played. I know it's not officially a category, but that definitely matters at the catcher position more than almost any other, where Sanchez is one of three catchers in the last decade to hit more than 30 home runs in a single season. Do you guys know the other two who accomplished the feat? You may be able to get it, but who are the other two catchers? Take a guess.
In the past decade?
Yes.
Did Piazza wasn't still around 10 years ago, was he?
No. Nope.
No.
This is back to 2008.
Todd Hundley.
Who? No.
Mike Napoli?
Yes, he did it in 2011.
That one I remembered. Let's see if I can... Well, Brett, you think of the other one since I got one.
yeah, good one.
It's out of the Brett Sayre playbook. Like, it's a guy you would know.
Well, that's why I thought of Napoli, because I know Brett likes him.
Did Gattis do it?
He did. Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, there we
you
go.
Have won the game. Evan Gattis in 2016, and then he hit 12 last year, so I don't know what to make of Evan Gattis. But, yeah, the floor is crazy high with Gary Sanchez, and I'm with you guys. I think there is a little bit of a difference between him and the other two names, which are in the four-star tier. We'll jump down to those guys. Any final thoughts here with Sanchez? I don't think there's anything left to talk about, right? Okay.
Well, the only thing I would say with Sanchez is, like, where are you taking him in a draft? Like, what's your ADP on him, roughly?
Do
in one catcher league or two catcher league?
Two catcher, like labor, Brett. So it's labor. You know, it's next month because that happens early. What's your rough, you know, ranking on him right now?
I'd look at him in the second round at labor.
Okay, so like probably 25 to 30 somewhere in there.
Maybe even in a two catcher league. Maybe even a touch high. Maybe somewhere in the 22 to 27 range.
Yeah, it's probably fair.
Yeah, we did a mock draft for BP. About 2 weeks ago now, I want to say, and I think I got him at almost pick 40, something like that. It felt like it was really late.
It was in the third round. It was of a 15 team. It was a pretty good value there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think Sanchez is going to depend on sort of the league context.
Brett and I were screwing with a pitching strategy, which is why that happened too.
Well, thank you guys.
Also, I had the wheel in that draft, so I wasn't going to take him at 15 or 16, and he wasn't there when I came back around again. So. No opportunity.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that draft, but we should at some point because that was pretty fun. And Brett's strategy was just wild. And I kind of liked how the team ended up, so can't knock it. Yeah, Sanchez right now in terms of ADP. Matt Collins writes our early ADP analysis for BP, and he has Sanchez right now at a second round value, average pick 22. Off the board, so that's pretty high. And let's go down to the four-star tier, and there are two names in it, sort of the big three at the position right now. You have Buster Posey and Wilson Contreras, and I guess I'll start with you, Brett, on Wilson Contreras. I don't know what the ceiling looks like for him because he hit 20 home runs last year, but he's still, I mean, his ground ball rate's over 50%. I don't see huge upside here from Contreras unless you want to make the case that he's just going to get so much playing time that the counting stats and the little bit of speed he does have sort of push him up close to Sanchez. But I'm interested in what you think on Contreras coming into this year.
Yeah, this is a long-running thing, even longer than he's been in the majors. I mean, he's consistently had extreme ground ball rates in the minors as well. And you know, I know there are people that think that there's another sort of there's another wave of power coming on top of this, but you know, even in the time of the launch angle revolution, I would not assume that we're all of a sudden going to see like a 35% fly, 35-40% fly ball rate from Contreras. And honestly, even if he did, I mean, kind of there kind of goes the batting average. So, and not that it wouldn't be a good trade off anyway, but I think anything more than 25 home runs, I think is unrealistic. And, you know, I think he's good, and I think he can, you know, I think he can put up a ceiling that looks like what I think we all think Gary Sanchez's floor looks like. But, you know, the extra gear is something that that I think Sanchez has and Contreras does not. And that's the real big separator for me for these two.
If anything, I think the one variable that could sort of drive his fantasy value from a valuation standpoint would be if he sort of went in the opposite direction and didn't hit as many home runs, but really increased his batting average, or he started to run more. I think those two factors would have more of an impact on his value than hitting a few more home runs would. So that's the thing I would kind of look at from Contreras. But Mike, you picked. Do you have any thoughts on Wilson Contreras? Because I feel like he's a really polarizing guy at the position right now, because there are some people who really think there's another level for him to get to.
I like him a little bit better than Brett, but I generally agree. Like, I don't see that other level. The thing I pointed out is, you know, he's improved his defense in real life, and the Cubs and the pitchers trust him more. So that will mean more games behind the plate. We're not going to see that job sharing we've seen before. So it'll be more volume. And for a guy who's a very good player, that'll help. But yeah, I don't see him, you know, suddenly becoming a different player statistically. Like, he is what he is for the most part, which is really good. But yeah, it's not in that, you know, people are comparing him to Sanchez. I would say stop. Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, he's clearly a top three fantasy catcher, but
yeah,
there's a little bit of a gap between.
I mean, he's in the four star for a reason. I'd rather have him than, you know, any of the guys in the three star tier. But yeah, he's not going to jump to the five star. Like, you know, the other guy here in this tier is more likely to have a resurgence than for that to happen for Contreras.
I'm interested. Have you put together NL only bid limits yet for a guy?
Yeah,
like
I have like a, rough.
Yeah,
I have a bid on him right now of 20.
Okay.
Yeah, that's and fair. I mean, you know, some of that is just the position, how weak it is, and scarcity, and you know, it's NL only, so you know, it's the idea that you're going to get a full season of a guy who's like really good. But yeah, Sanchez is significantly higher in the AL, so there's a difference.
Okay. Brett, we are competing in the RotoWire Dynasty Invitational at the moment. We are in the middle of the draft, literally almost just a little bit past the halfway point of the draft, and you have Buster Posey as your catcher. So, it's same story here with Posey. I mean, any reason for concern? If anything, it feels like he's going at a little bit of a discount this year than anything.
Yeah, he is going at a little bit of a discount, and I think it's a great opportunity for fantasy owners. I mean, Posey feels like he's been around forever, and I know it's easy to lump him in with you know the elder statesman at the position, but you know he's still only 30 years old, and the other thing about Posey is that he has what Gary Sanchez has, which is he gets playing time outside of catcher, which is enormous. And Buster Posey, I had it open and then I closed it. But Posey played in 38 games at first base last year and started 30 games there. So it's, you know, it's very much a thing. Brandon Belt is not a guarantee to stay healthy, and they could even play in the outfield if they wanted to. But Posey is a great bet to play in 140 plus games. He's done it in all of the last six seasons, And I think the power dip is something that people are getting overly concerned about for no great reason. His fly ball rate was actually up last year compared to 2016, and right in line with his peak average. So a return to 15 to 20 home runs, I think, is totally reasonable, and a 300 average, I think, is totally reasonable, and that makes him Buster Posey. He's also stolen 6 bases in each of the last 2 years, which is really sneaky. For all the talk that JT Realmuto, and we'll get to him, gets for stealing what, 7 bases, 8 bases?
8 bases.
No one talks about Buster Posey in this, but it's a real thing, and he's now done it 2 years in a row, and I think we can kind of factor it in a little bit to his value.
The other thing, we've kind of discussed this offline, but adding Evan Longoria, I don't think is insignificant here for the Giants. Like, he's a legitimate middle of the order type of bat who I think gives Posey a little bit extra in terms of someone behind him who can make things happen, or if they want to put him in front of him, that's just another quality bat in that lineup. Whereas last year they didn't really have one. I mean, it was like guys like Joe Panic and Brandon Crawford, no disrespect, but those guys were sometimes hitting like cleanup, it felt like, in some of their games.
Yeah.
So.
And they've got, we talked about the free agency thing. I mean, they've got, it's amazing how many guys are unsigned, but the Giants are in on a lot of offensive free agents as well. I would not be surprised if they added another, pretty high quality bat to their team before the season starts.
Yeah, like Lorenzo Cain or someone like that. Like, that would not shock me at all if they could land someone like that. So, Mike, you actually picked Buster Posey as your 4-star value, and his ADP, according to Matt Collins' column, say that 5 times fast, is the 5th round right now, pick 62. Man.
Yeah, it's tough to pick value picks in these top 2 tiers, and sometimes it's tongue in cheek. But that's what I was looking at. Like, Posey's not a great value there, but if you can get him in the 5th round, I agree with Brett. Like, he's a really good player, and the only thing I'll add to Brett's point, I mentioned this in the piece, Posey's the last 5 years he's been a 300 hitter on average, and the position on average has hit 243. You're locking in a lot of batting average at a position where you normally can't, or you get hurt. And it's not like you're locking in an empty batting average. You're getting some stats with it too. So if you can't get Sanchez, you don't want to pay that big price, or if somebody reaches, I'm okay with taking Posey in the 5th round and Wayne. Now, I think in 2 catcher leagues, he's going to go higher just because that's the nature of 2 catcher leagues. But even in the 4th, maybe even late in the 3rd, if you really want to get a catcher, I don't have a problem pulling the trigger there.
So before we get into the 3-star guys and then the rest of the catching talent pool, I want to take a moment here to talk about just general draft strategy and your strategic approach at the position, because I think the big question here, I think, within the industry is going to be, do you sink that early round pick in a snake draft, or do you commit the auction dollar capital to one of those 3 guys, or are you willing to just roll the dice on someone later because the names are just sort of interchangeable? It's about what type of the skills you're looking for later on. So where do you guys stand on that question, whether you invest early in Sanchez, Contreras, or Posey, or do you wait at the position for an alternative?
Well, I think if you're talking about auction, it's always about price. Like, I don't have a big problem paying the market value for one of these 3 guys, but I don't want to chase. So, I mentioned Contreras, my price is 20, and your reaction was that seems fair. So that means to me, if I can get him at 20, low 20s, or get Posey around there, maybe a little bit lower, I'm okay with that. Like, what I don't want to do with Posey, as much as I just said I liked him and talked about how good he is, I don't want to chase him to his price from 3 years ago. Like, I don't want to pay like 25, 26 for him. There is a danger if you go too far with one of these guys. And, as much as we talk about position scarcity, there's only so much they can do. And you don't go so far past their ceiling that you take the value out of the proposition, so to speak. So I'd like to get one of these guys. My strategy in 2 catcher leagues is generally one stud or near stud and one $1 flyer. Mm-hmm. But if I can't do that, I'm not afraid to just kind of wait and play the second tier.
Yeah, I'll just jump in and say that I think that what we're going to see, and we've seen it a little bit already, is, you know, Mike's talked a lot about this, especially in terms of tout and labor and how those leagues individually value closers, that catching prices are just drifting more and more to be league dependent rather than you know, value dependent. You could, you know, given what's going on at the position, I think you're going to see more. You're going to see more people with acute catcher strategies than we've used to see in the past, and it's going to make for some weird dislocation probably this year. And I'm curious to see how it plays out in some of the expert leagues, because it's sort of a prime opportunity to sort of reset how we think about the position.
I have two thoughts based on that. One, based on everything you guys just said. One, I never go into a draft with a set strategy where I say to myself, I am going to get Gary Sanchez or Buster Posey, and I set a bid limit, or I plan in a snake draft that, all right, I'm going to take him here at this spot no matter what happens. I subscribe to your philosophy, Mike, where you kind of go where the value takes you in a draft. And if that sounds like a cliche, like something we talk about all the time, it's just true, and it's something you just develop over time when you do a number of these drafts. So you just have to be comfortable where if you don't get one of those three guys, just be willing to have a backup plan. And Brett, you talked about just sort of the position changing, and the way I kind of look at it is the position hasn't evolved in terms of power the way other positions have. It's kind of lagged behind. I mean, just going back and looking at the difference between 2014 and 2017, like at a position like shortstop or first base, those two positions have gained and just a little bit over 60 points and 48 points, respectively, in terms of slugging percentage from 2014 to 2017. Catchers have only added about 30 points in slugging. So I just don't think the position has kept up with the power surge relative to all the other ones. So it's kind of just lagged behind a little bit. So that's why I feel more comfortable trying to get one of those top three guys if I can. If that makes any sense. I mean, have you guys noticed that just the position seems like it just hasn't kept pace with the other ones in terms of offense picking up across the board?
I think it has in fantasy leagues. I think some of that stuff gets weighed down by the framing revolution. Honestly, I think that puts more people behind the plate that don't have really very much offensive ability, and I think that weighs it down. But I think the bigger thing, Darius Austin, one of our new writers, wrote about this on Monday, is that the biggest thing that we're noticing about the catcher position is that the playing time stalwarts are getting fewer and further between, which makes it a lot more valuable to be one of those guys, and it makes it a lot less valuable to not be one of those guys. It's a crude comparison because they're nowhere near as valuable, but you sort of see, you know, for those of you who still play fantasy football, and I don't really, but it strikes me as a similar thing to what happens with running backs, where when there's more running backs by committee, the running backs who have, you know, who get all of the snaps have more value. And you know, when you only have a handful of guys playing 130 games a year, you know, they are able to put up counting stats that the others are not, and it makes a big difference.
That's a cross sport analogy, and I commend you for it. Nice work. Anybody have any final thoughts? You guys, you kind of touched on the difference in strategy between one and two catcher leagues. I think in a two catcher league, if you don't get a quality starter, At least one. Like, you are really in trouble.
It's really tough to go. You know, I know that, like, you know, it's funny. My former colleague who I'm in a league with, you know, our former colleague, Keith Cromer, he's in my home league, and he often used to do $2 catchers in our AL only. And he's abandoned that. And part of the reason he has abandoned it is just because it's very difficult. And, you know, some of this is the power revolution. It's very difficult when you have, like, even your scrubby catcher who's a starter hitting 10, 12 home runs to just decide you're going to take a backup who's going to get 100, 150 at bats and do nothing. You're throwing away, even in only, you're throwing away 20, 25 home runs by doing that. And I think that's very difficult to do.
Yeah, and to Brett's point, it's just hard to find those sort of under the radar guys who are going to walk into full time at bats. Like, it just doesn't happen anymore.
I mean, the other thing too, despite the fly ball or home run revolution, whatever you want to call it, the backups really aren't. Not too many of them are producing at that level anyway. Like, you're not finding, you know, like Sal Fasano's of the world or those guys who just kind of come out of nowhere, like hit 8 home runs and, you know, 150 at bats, and you're happy with it. Those guys just don't exist. Like, the backups really are like the framers or the caddies to the really good pitchers, like the David Ross of the world.
Yeah, the days of the Doug Mirabelli All-Star are long gone.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm not going to share Doug Mirabelli stories. That's a great pull, though. All right, let's talk about the three starts here. And the way we're going to do the three-star and the two-star tiers are we're going to pick a value target, so whatever you want to call it. I know it's hard to predict values ahead of time like we talked about earlier, but someone that you could find yourself, envision yourself targeting at the position, and we're each going to pick someone we are either avoiding or that we sort of throw the caution flag when we look at their name. So I'll start with you, Mike, since you wrote the rankings. You get the first pick here for your target or your value pick at the three-star tier. And there's about 7 names in this tier, so plenty of options.
Well, I'm going to go with the guy I wrote about, who's Mike Zunino. People, I think, forget how young he is, and because he had a couple of years where he was just awful with the bat. I know there's some people I've talked to who still look at what he did last year as a fluke. I wouldn't. He made a swing adjustment. I know we've read those stories about him nearly every offseason. But this one, based on the sample size, seems to have stuck. He's going to play. You know, it's funny. Our framing metrics actually don't have him as highly ranked as some other sites do. But I know the Mariners and their scouts there really believe, you know, in him as a top framer. So he's going to play for that reason as well. The pitchers like him. Your boy Big Maple George likes him. I just don't, you know, the floor for him obviously is a bad batting average and regression. But what I see as a more realistic floor is like 230, 240 with 20, 25 home runs. I think he could do more than that, though. I think the average bump that he had last year could be legit. And I could see him cracking 30 home runs. I don't want to oversell it. I think you're still looking at like 250 with 30 home runs. But in this tier, if he can get there, that plays.
Brett, who's your guy in this tier?
Yeah, it's Evan Gaddis. was that really a
question? No, I could have guessed that right out of the gate.
Yeah. Even if Gaddis is the exact same hitter that he was last year, he's got most of the DH at bats to himself, at least when he's not, you know, spelling Brian McCann behind the plate. He hit .263 with 12 homers and 55 RBI in 300 at bats. I think the power production was lower than I think you'd expect on a per at bat basis anyway. But I think it's extremely reasonable, and I don't want to sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but, you know, the catchers who don't play catcher and who actually can hit will get the playing time you need to really make them a separator. And, you know, it's something that Gaddis should have in front of him. I think he can get to 450 plate appearances. And I think he can, you know, I think he can hit, you know, 260, 265 with 25 plus homers. And there's going to be a lot of RBI opportunities in that lineup. I mean, for, you know, I don't know that I'll necessarily get to talk about them later, but this is the same reason why I'm also a little bullish on Brian McCann. Is that Houston had the best offense in baseball last year. They probably will have the best offense in baseball again in 2018, or at least they have the best chance to among other teams, Yankees included. And there's just there are a lot of counting stats to go around, and you know, you might as well jump in on them.
If my memory is correct, I think Gattis had a shoulder injury early on last year that may have impacted the power for a while. So who knows? We'll see. I'd bank on him bouncing back to it. Like, I would be comfortable paying for 25 homers at a minimum. You know, I'd be fine with that. Evan Gattis is good. He's still only, what, 31 this year? So,
yeah. He's averaged 25 home runs a year up until 2017 for 4 years. So,
yeah, and the at-bats are there.
He's not crazy.
Yeah, he's going to DH every day. That's that could be very useful. All right, my guy, I think you guys know where I'm going with this. JT Realmuto. I do still like him. I think part of the reason why is because, let's be honest, Miami's terrible. They're not good. He's probably going to be their cleanup hitter now at this point. I've been really encouraged by some of the things we've seen from Realmuto, at least defensively. The last year, he made huge strides per BP's metrics. I mean, we've talked about this on past podcasts, but he was an atrocious framer for the first 2 to 3 years of his big league career here. He cost the Marlins over 20 runs in 2015 and 16 combined. Last year, he graded out as a top 11 catcher by BP's numbers. So he's made big strides defensively. I think that helps him, you know, lock up playing time for good at catcher. And he's one of, let's see, 5 catchers since 2013 to have at least 10 home runs and 8 steals in a single season. And he's done it 3 years in a row. He's the only guy to do it multiple years. So you're going to get a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. I don't think he's crazy expensive these days. So I like JT Realmuto as my target if I had to pick a guy in this tier. Let's talk about guys we don't necessarily like or that we have concerns about. I'll go back to you, Mike, for your caution flag or your avoid.
My caution flag in this tier. Let's see. It's funny because I like most of the catchers here, and since I'm the one who put the rankings together, I, you know, kind of a little bias. Well,
do you want me to go first? I have one if you want.
No, I mean, okay. The guy here is Yadier Molina. Like, look, I panned him last year, and I pointed out how old he was, and of course he went out and, you know, you see the numbers, you know, 18 home runs, 82 runs batted in. You know, we talked about Posey and Realmuto. Molina somehow stole 9 bases. Look, I get it. He's a really good player, and, you know, I know some people in St. Louis think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't, but, you know, he's had a hell of a career. But everything I said last year was true. He's a year older. Like, I'm fine with him in this tier, but I'm really nervous that one of these years at his age and with his profile, he's just going to kind of fall off the cliff. And that power did come out of nowhere. Like prior to 2016, he was hitting for good average. He wasn't hitting for power. At the very least, I'm not buying the power. Like, even if he does everything else, I'm just skeptical of that. So I'm okay with him here. I just think that at a certain point, and I don't know where his ADP is right now.
Oh, I do.
There's definitely some risk. Where is his ADP?
154th overall. That's the 11th round.
Yeah, that's a little high. It's not as high as I thought it would be, though.
It's still pretty high.
I think, you know, all the guys we mentioned before, I think everyone in this tier, I'd rather have than Molina.
Yep. Brett, who's a guy that you're kind of shying away from?
I don't know that there's anyone in this tier that I'm really shying away from. I guess if I had to pick someone, I'd pick Realmuto based on where he's going. I'm not really buying the combination batting average and power. I don't think he's going to. I don't think he's going to continue to do both. I think it's more likely that the power takes a step back. And I also, you know, there's only so much credit you can give him for single digit stolen bases. And I don't want to come off as being too crass about that, but you know, we're not talking about like a 20 steal catcher here. The way some people talk about him, and I'm not talking about you, George, but the way some people talk about Real Muto, they make it sound like it's like Paul Goldschmidt behind the plate, where it's like, oh, all of a sudden you got this position that you don't expect to get speed from, and he's getting 20, 30 steals. You know, if you got 8 steals from Real Muto, you'd be happy.
That is kind of funny. It's funny how like we do these, you know, staff, like, you know, I send these ranks out to the staff, and the last 2 years everyone's fallen over the Real Muto steals. And it's kind of blown off, you know. I just send out first base, like they get all like angry about Will Myers and where I have him ranked. And you know, I get it, they're different positions, but like Myers has stolen like more than 20 bases 2 years in a row. Whereas, yeah, Real Muto, that it's good for the position, but I just don't think it offers that much. And you know, I'm not pissing on Real Muto. I think he's fine, but yeah, it sometimes it's a little overstated.
You want to know where you do have a case here, guys, with against Real Muto, the counting stats, they're going to be really not good this year. I don't know how else to describe it. They're going to be considerably lower this year, because that supporting cast is brutal. I mean, you lose not only Stanton, but D. Gordon was you know, a lock to score if he got on base. It's basically Yelich, and that's it. I mean, who knows if Castro's still going to be there on opening day, or I don't know what's happening with that roster. So. Yeah, my guy, if I had to pick one, would be Sal Perez for basically the same reason. I have no idea what the Royals' offense is going to look like. Are they bringing Eric Hosmer back? Who else is there besides Whit Merrifield? If you want to say Roel Mondesi can lead off, fine. But they basically lost their entire offense into free agency here. So I have no idea who's coming back or if anyone is. So. I'd be concerned about counting stats. He had 80 RBIs last year. I don't see him doing that again if the only guy they have coming back is like Whit Merrifield. That's it. So, yeah, I'd be concerned about Perez, who's going just outside the top 100 picks right now. So I'd rather wait 70 picks and take Mike Zunino. And I know it's early ADP, but you can wait and get someone else later is my point. Let's talk about the two-star tier here. I think I know exactly where you guys are going to go with all of these picks, but I'll go to you, Mike, first for your two-star value target pick.
Well, this time I'm going to avoid talking about who I pick, because, you know, you can just read the article, and that's not the most exciting thing. That was also partially picked him because the staff was high on him. So there's a couple guys here I like, but I'm going to go with somebody who I think I'm going to go with the guy I think Brett's going to take. I'm going to go with Francisco Mejia. The more I look at him, now I know some people, his early ADP is a little bit higher than where I have in the tiers, but I just love the upside with this guy. And I think at some point, even if it isn't at the beginning of the season, Cleveland's going to have to find a place for his bat. It's really special. He's a good looking hitter. And he's going to produce, and I don't know what the shape of those stats are going to be and what he's going to look like as a rookie, but I think we've seen this the past couple of years. Like we've wondered what a player is going to look like, and we think, oh, you know, maybe he won't hit for power, maybe he won't hit for average, maybe he won't do this, maybe he won't do that. And we've kind of learned the last year or two, just take the player. I have to say, I probably won't wind up with Mejia based on where he's being priced in redraft. But if you can get him at this price or in this tier, I like him compared to some of these catchers.
That was going to be my pick. So, Brett, who do you have?
I tried to snipe Brett, and I sniped you.
I have more Mejia facts if you like them. Brett, who are you taking?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of cheated before, and I talked about Brian McCann when we were talking about Evan Gattis. I mean, he'd definitely be my guy in this tier, but I won't quite go into him again. I really do think Tyler Flowers is a perfectly reasonable value where he's going, and I think his bat is real. I think you can get some batting average out of him. I think you can get a little power out of him, and I'm not concerned about him losing playing time to Kurt Suzuki.
No, really not.
I think he's probably the safest player outside of McCann. I think he's the safest player in this tier, and especially if you're in a deeper league, safety is pretty valuable when you start to see the rest of the guys in this tier and then the people who happen to occupy the one star tier. You don't want any piece of that.
Not to keep harping on ADP, but Tyler Flowers' ADP is ridiculous. It's 308. It's like the 21st round. That's absurd. You should definitely draft Tyler Flowers sooner than that. Austin Hedges is going ahead of him. I can't make that case. I don't care what ADP you're using. No. My guy was going to be Mejia. And I mean, I'll just cite the BP prospect teams write up of him for this year. And they do a great job. The top 10 lists are coming out every week. We're getting towards the end of those. But if you're a BP subscriber, you should definitely be checking those out already. And if you're not, that's a reason to subscribe. They're doing great work. So I want to tout them here. But the start of the write-up for Mejia is he's a switch-hitting catcher with a potential 70 hit tool and 50 grade power. We don't need to write more. I mean, that from a skill standpoint, Mejia, I think, is really getting overshadowed by, maybe justifiably so, by Ronald Acuna, Victor Robles, Vlad Guerrero Jr. I mean, those guys are fantastic prospects in their own right, but we haven't seen a catching prospect like this in a long time, I don't feel like.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it is tough. You know, we Sanchez was great, but it is tough for a rookie catcher to produce in fantasy, and I think that's some of it. Yeah, I don't think Mejia is going to be Sanchez, but I think he will defy or do better than what we usually see from the rookie catcher and where he kind of struggles, or, you know, he's okay but nothing special. I think Mejia, if he gets the at bats, will be above that.
Now, I'm just gonna throw it out there. The last two like really elite catching prospects, depends how you categorize it, but two of the last really elite catching prospects of the last decade or so are both in the one star tier. So you take that with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Yeah.
You know, their failure is not Mejia's failure, but catching prospects are weird. Love Mejia's bat, but there's risk here.
But if you're gonna bet on a guy, you bet on the guy with a hit tool. Right, I mean, that's the separator here with Mejia.
He's in a good organization too. Like he's not on the Mets. I mean, no offense to the Mets, but well, I don't care if they're offended. But you know, he's not in a bad organization where I'm like, oh God, like they're gonna mess this up. Like if there's a place you'd want him, like it's there or Houston or maybe Chicago. And I mean, the Cubs. He has a lot going for him. Like I agree, Brett. He could fail, which is why he's in the two star tier. It's why he's not in the three star or the four star. And you know, it's funny, Brett. You had, I think, suggested putting Alfaro in the three star tier, and that was a few suggestions I didn't take, and that was part of why I resisted. What was for the reason you're citing, which is there's risk with catching prospects.
I mean, if I'm picking a guy who I think I could envision at the end of the year, he's in the three-star tier, and I go, well, yeah, obviously. I mean, that's Mejia's the guy for me in this tier. And, like, you're right, Mike, to your point. Like, I trust Terry Francona, too. Even if he struggles, he's not going to put him on the end of the bench and forget about him for 3 weeks. So, yeah, I think he's in a good spot, and if everything clicks, he could do something really special here. So I'd take a shot on Mejia. I mean, why not at this point in the catcher pool? So really quickly, guys, is who's someone you're avoiding here in this tier? Because I think there are some interesting names here that we can certainly dissect, but I'd be interested to get your thoughts. I'll start with you, Mike.
You know, my big question is what the heck's going to happen, like, with Yasmani Grandal? You know, we really, I know Brett, you know, he's the guy I thought Brett would pick here. You know, just because if he does get traded and he does get a full-time job somewhere, he's, you know, he can do what he usually does, which is 20, 25 home runs, hit 250. I still believe in the upside with Grandal. If he's not traded, and I know right now things are dead in baseball with movement, not just with free agency, but trades, what are they going to do? Like, you know, it Austin Barnes starting in the postseason and Grandal becoming an afterthought just kind of came out of nowhere. And, you know, I scoured all the LA papers. You know, I looked at McCullough. You know, I read everybody out there. I still don't quite understand why the Dodgers did that. Like, there was never a good explanation for why they made that move. And, you know, look, I know that, you know, BP's framing numbers aren't everybody's framing numbers or metrics, but it just seems strange that suddenly Grandal, who's arguably the best framer in baseball the last 3 years, just disappeared completely. So is there more to that? Like, I have no idea. Like, the whole situation there just seemed very strange. And I have no idea how it's going to play out. Like, both these guys, because Grandal could earn more, but I feel like we're kind of stuck with them here for now until we get more information.
I know Barnes is better against lefties, left-handed pitchers. I know that was one of the reasons, at least offensively, they wanted to get his bat in there against lefties at the end. So that might be one reason, but go ahead, Brett.
It's really hard to know what they're going to do, and it's going to be a real problem for early drafts. But, you know, the problem is that I think what we're going to see is that Austin Barnes is going to be the guy that gets the benefit of the doubt, and Yasmani Grandal is going to be the guy who doesn't. And, you know, in these situations when it's really unclear what is going to happen, and the, you know, they could have a timeshare, one of them could be traded, you know, I think you're in the uncertainty, it's better to go with the more appropriately valued player and not necessarily worry about trying to read every single tea leaf about the situation. I mean, it's obviously worth paying attention to what's going on, but there are going to be, you know, even though baseball's completely dead right now, there are going to be rumors again at some point about what their plan is. But you know, no matter how much you like Austin Barnes, if he's playing 100 games, you know, that's just not very good. And same with Grandal, no matter how much you like him, if he's going to play 80 games, not good. So it's really just I'm really curious to see where their draft spots go from here, but that's sort of where I can imagine it going.
Austin Barnes to me is that guy someone always likes more. You know what I mean? Like, someone always believes in him more than I do, and I never end up with him anywhere, it feels like. So he just feels like that type of guy. You're either all in or you just kind of never have to deal with that problem, I guess. So Brett, who is
I have a question for you. Do you know how old Austin Barnes is?
Isn't he 28? He's older than Realmuto, I know. So he's got
Austin Barnes is 28. He's 28 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not like 24 like people, some people I think he is, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not meant to be a knock on him. I mean, that's still, you know, younger than a lot of other players in this category, but you know, there is, especially when you get people talking about long-term valuation of Barnes. I mean, he's new to us, but he's not new to, like, the earth.
you also don't want to look at any of his offensive numbers before 2017 at the major league level. They will burn your eyes. It's not fun. It's like looking at an eclipse. Brett, who is your avoid target here? If there is one,
honestly, I don't really have one. I mean, I'm not gonna. I think all these guys in the right spot are, you know, could be reasonable. I think Iannata at Coors has the potential to return some value. You know, I'm not completely out on Jonathan Lucroy. I'm probably mostly out on Russell Martin, but everybody else is too. So you're not, you're, he's not going particularly high in drafts. You know, I think Robinson Chirinos has the potential to do similar things in 2017 than he did in 2016, despite the drop off. I mean, you, the thing is, you look at the two star tier and everyone looks great compared to the one star tier. So it's, it, you can make an argument for just about anybody. I really don't think there's anybody in particular I'd be avoiding here. I wouldn't reach for any of them, but I wouldn't necessarily avoid them.
There's a reality in two catcher leagues. This goes back to what we talked about before. You know, unless you're going to just take one of the guys in the one star tier at a buck, if you want two catchers getting every day or mostly every day at bats, you need one of these guys.
Yeah, this is your 10 through 20. This is 10 names right here. These are catchers number 11 through 20. And if you are in a 20 team league that's one catcher or fewer teams than that, then great. That means you're probably going to get to choose one of this group from there. But if you're in a league like Labor and there are 30 catchers rostered, if you don't grab two guys from the two star group on up, it's not going to be pretty.
That's a depressing thought. I'll just say this: Jonathan Lucroy, I'd be worried about him just because the defense really has gone off the cliff, so to speak. So,
the funny thing was, I had Lucroy here, and a lot of people on the staff like were surprised and moved him higher. I have a lot of worries about him. You know, it's a defense. It's the ground ball rate that just, you know, seemed to kind of spike. I mean, he's talented. He could certainly bounce back, but he's those players where we just have no idea. Like, he could finish the year either as a complete washout or a middle of the pack guy, like, or like an upper three star tier hitter. I wouldn't be surprised by either or one of those results. Like, we just don't know.
Yeah, he turns 32 in June, and I mean, his numbers got inflated a little bit in Coors, but he had only two home runs in close to 200 plate appearances there. So, I think I'd let someone else take the shot on Lucroy. I don't want to own him this year. The one star, every year we do this exercise, we pick a one star position player at each spot, and we never go back and look at the results to see who ended up with the best team, but we might actually do that this year. So let's see. Since I've given Mike all of the first picks earlier, I'm going to give Brett the first crack here at the one star catchers, which is it is a rough bunch down here.
It is a rough bunch down here, and I am going to do the completely unsurprising thing, and I am going to take Travis d'Arnaud.
I knew it.
I think there is still something there, and if there isn't, he's going to be hurt, and you can move on to another one-star catcher, and you can be just as disappointed. But there is, I really do think there is something there. The chances of having d'Arnaud hit 260 with 22 home runs, I think is higher than the chances of anybody else in this tier doing it. So why not throw a dart?
Oof. Mike, you're up.
I the funny thing about d'Arnaud before I go on is I had him, you look at his NL earnings here, I had him in tout for like five or six. Like, he turned me a mild profit. Like, that's what's kind of funny about catchers, which is, as bad as he was, like, he was okay. This is the do I have to tier, so I'm really not like high on any of these guys. But you know, I guess if I had to, I'm gonna roll the dice on James McCann and hope that the framing, as bad as it is, keeps him in a job, or it doesn't matter, or you know, Detroit doesn't have a viable alternative, at least for another year. Yeah, again, this is a one star tier. This isn't like he's anything special, but I could see him hitting like 15, 17 home runs with that 253 average again, getting a few more plate appearances. You know, he should be fine. You know, what I really want to avoid in this tier more than anything else is getting saddled with the awful batting average. I don't want to accidentally back into like Austin Hedges last year, where he hits the home runs, but it's a 214 and almost 400 at bats. Like, I don't want that. I feel like with McCann, I'm mostly avoiding that. I mean, not completely. You never know. But yeah, he's a guy I'll take in this garbage tier.
That's a ringing endorsement. I am going to go off the board, and I'm going to take Tom Murphy. A year ago, everybody seemed to think he was fantastic, and then he was hurt and didn't really do anything last year. And I think the power is very much real. I think, like Mike said, I mean, you could be getting an awful batting average here. Like, he could legitimately hit like a .180. But it's Coors. I think if he has a little bit of a hot streak here, he could do some damage. I don't want to take out like Alex Avila here. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather not. I'll take Tom Murphy. I don't know. Catcher's so rough here at the end. Well, what do you guys think of Chance Cisco? I mean, I don't know what to expect, but it sounds like he's going to play every day for Baltimore, unless they sign somebody here.
I mean, there's still guys available. I don't trust that he's going to play that much. Mm. I think the strikeout rate is concerning, given that batting average is going to be his greatest area of contribution. He struck out about 26% of the time in AAA. I don't expect his strikeout rate to be lower than that in his first extended period of time in the majors. So, you're looking at someone who's probably not gonna get to double digit home runs and would need to rely on batting average, and might be a 260 hitter, 270 hitter, if it breaks reasonably well.
That's a problem with him. I feel like in the context we're in with that lack of power, he needs to hit like 290, and he's not going to do that. So, like, I look at him at least for this year, at best, even if he does play a lot, he's just kind of a placeholder guy, or an only. If he does hit 270, he's a guy you're like, okay, like he's kind of the better batting average version of Jason Castro in this tier, where you're like, okay, less power, but maybe more average than Jason Castro, where you're like, all right, that's fine in an only.
Wow. I think Christian Vasquez is decent. I don't totally buy everything he did last year, but
I don't think the average is sustainable, though.
No, but I don't think he's the worst catcher in the world either. I've run out of endorsements. That's it. I just wanted to say something nice about Christian Vasquez.
Well, it's funny. Look, to Brett's point, looking at the free agents, I'm looking at the pool right now. It's like Lucroy,
Avila.
Avila, if he signs, will probably wind up in some kind of job share. Ugh. AJ Ellis is a defensive guy, but he's 36.
He is not a defensive guy anymore. I want to clear that up.
Some teams see him that way, I could see him getting a job as a caddy, but there's just not much there.
Yeah. All right. Hey, that does it for catchers.
is Chooch going to come back, or is he done?
I think he's done.
I don't think we're going to see him.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yep. All right. We got a million. Before we wrap up here, we got a million questions about Danny Jensen. Jansen? Oh God, I'm gonna have to redo that.
Jansen.
Okay, so we got a ton of questions on Twitter about Danny Jensen, who is the catching.
Jansen. It's Jansen. This is like the worst Abbott and Costello routine.
Oh no. Okay, I'll do it right this time. All right, so we got a million questions about Danny Jansen on Twitter. He's a catching prospect for the Toronto Blue Jays. I think there's a little bit of hype building based on the minor league numbers he put up last year. But, Brett, this is a guy who had really struggled throughout his professional career here up until last season.
Yeah, it's been really kind of a rough go for him, but I really, really think he can win the gold in the 1,000 meter in the 1994 Olympics. So I don't. Yeah, I don't think I don't think there should be I don't think there should be a dearth of hope here. But you know, maybe with a little extra time, how much time do we have until the next Winter Olympics? What is it?
The ones in South Korea? It's not that far away, is it?
I don't know. Clearly, I care more about Dan Jansen, the speed skater, than I do about Dan Jansen, the Blue Jays catcher.
Do you know how old I was in 1994, Mike?
Four?
Three.
Close. Yeah, I was close.
Oh, man. All right, it wouldn't be a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast without an obligatory Max Pentecost reference. So, you know, maybe he gets a few at-bats here this season. Who knows? If he can only stay healthy. So that's going to do it for our catcher preview. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with first baseman. So, guys, any final thoughts here before we wrap up? I think that's it. I think we got it.
I think we've covered this inside and out.
All right. So, that's going to do it for Flags Fly Forever, episode 154. Thank you all for listening. For Mike Gianella and Brent Sayer, this is George Bissell saying until our next podcast, we'll be back to do First Baseman next week. So long, everybody. That's it.
Good night.